Welcome to the Refuge Recovery Podcast. Refuge Recovery is a Buddhist-oriented path to recovery from addictions. For more information, please visit us at refugerecovery.org.
Okay, it's 5 p.m. in California. Welcome, everybody. This is the monthly offering of Refuge Recovery World Services. We call it the first Thursday, as we hold it on the first Thursday of each month, where I do a pick a topic, lead a meditation, and do a talk and have some discussion about some aspect of refuge recovery. I've been going through the Eightfold Path the last few weeks. Tonight we're on the sixth factor of the path, I think. Effort and energy. And if you're looking for a peer-led refuge recovery meeting, you're in the wrong place. This is the only place in refuge recovery where you'll actually get some teachings and question and answer. This is a world services offering that I do monthly. But there's lots of meetings. Check if you're new. This is not typical refuge recovery. Go check out some meetings as well. Reflecting on maybe we'll meditate and but I'll say a couple things about the topic before we meditate, applicable to our meditation practice. This topic and aspect of the Buddha's teaching around how much effort it takes, how much is the appropriate effort, how much energy do we need to put into our path of recovery, to our meditation practice, to our renunciation practice, to our study, to our service. You know, it's like every aspect of our life, like everything. Probably none of our recovery, probably none of our practice is going to be effortless. It's all going to take some effort. We're going to have to apply some of our energy and our to meditating, to defying the mind's suggestions, to renunciation, even just not doing what we want to do also takes some effort. Just that kind of, oof, I have to resist craving, urges, takes some effort. I'd like us all to reflect for a moment, and I'm sure there's varying, in a diverse group of recovering addicts like us, but if we reflect back on how much effort did we put into maintaining our addictions? I always think that this is an interesting perspective. I think somewhere in the 12-step book, I think it says something about if we put a fraction of the amount of effort into our recovery that we put into our alcoholism, we will have great success in recovery. I think it says that somewhere. And, for each of us reflecting, how much effort did we put into our addiction? How hard was it to stay addicted? And I don't know, maybe for some of you would say actually staying addicted was effortless. I didn't have to put any effort in. It was totally natural. And I just, it was all there and I just maintained it. Now, if I think maybe first, maybe that could possibly be true for some alcoholics that just had an abundance of alcohol and it didn't take a lot of effort and they just drank and drank and drank and drank because it was there. Maybe that could be true for some food addicts that, kind of like, oh, it was effortless. I just, went through the fast food drive-through. They made it so easy, so effortless to just have, and I just, was on the, food addiction I didn't take a lot of effort. I just did what I just satisfied my cravings, and they were affordable and accessible. I think for a lot of us that were primarily substance abuse addicts, that there came a time in drug addiction for most of us where it was like, oh no, this is it's hard to maintain this. It takes so much effort to maintain this addiction, to afford it, to maintain it, to hide it, to my own experience of drug addiction. I was like, it was a full-time job to obtain drugs and put my time and energy every day into getting drugs. And so just like thinking about that, and maybe not even in the act of addiction, but the other things that we do, the effort, the energy, the time that we have. I mean, how often people say, oh, I don't have time to meditate. I don't, like you'd say, tell somebody like, yeah, we want you to meditate 20 minutes a day. And they're like, ooh, that's, you're asking for a lot. Like, really? We're asking for 20 minutes? That's a lot of effort to be asked for, like there's so many things that we do, that so many, we're always spending our energy some way, and now channeling it into healing, channeling it into recovery, channeling it into something positive and forward leaning in our life rather than just avoidance and suppression and ignorance and chasing pleasure and running from pain, actually turning towards the causes of suffering in our lives, turning towards our minds, turning towards the process of developing wisdom and compassion, practicing renunciation.
What?
So, after, we'll discuss this a little bit, and we'll look a little bit at what I suggested in the book around effort. But in meditation, almost all of the meditation practice until a very advanced stage, maybe at some point meditation becomes effortless. But we are training the mind, and I like that, training the mind. And to train, it takes effort, it takes energy. Mindfulness, coming to the present, isn't the mind's natural state. It takes effort to continue returning to the present, to ignoring the plans and memories, to be here, to be embodied. It takes a lot of effort, especially in the first years of practice. After some years of training the mind, we get a little bit more accustomed to like being present and not being so identified with what the mind is doing. As I say in one part of the book, when we've had some success at breaking our addiction to the mind, and we're no longer so addicted to obeying and being identified with the mind, then mindfulness becomes a little bit easier, a little bit more natural. Likewise with loving kindness or compassion or forgiveness or equanimity or appreciation or any of the heart practices. In the beginning, we have to get those phrases going. I forgive you as much as I can. Please forgive me. And it takes effort, and then your mind wanders and you have to come back. Effort. May I be happy? May I be at ease? May I be free? Your mind come back to the phrases. After some years, or perhaps even decades of the effort of saying these phrases over and over in our minds and doing the mindfulness over and over, the mind does become somewhat trained and there's less effort needed. In one of my favorite teachings from the Buddha, this is not in the Refuge book, but it's called the Simile of the Cloth. And he says, you could, he said, you could liken, he's in dialogue with somebody, and he says, you could liken what we're doing is to an internal bathing, an internal purification. He said, the human mind's and mind and heart's true nature is like an unstained cloth. But through birth and karma and trauma and everything that we go through, all of these stains, and then the Dharma practice, meditation, is scrubbing away those stains and abandoning that which has been causing us suffering, greed, hatred, delusion, addiction, self-centeredness, all of that stuff, lust, you know, selfishness, jealousy, all of those afflictive emotions. He says, that's what's getting in the way. That's what's getting in the way of our happiness, our freedom, our recovery. He says, so this practice, this Four Noble Truths, these Eightfold Path, is how we cleanse the heart and the mind, how we recover that true nature of a clean, unstained, untarnished heart mind. And there's a place in there, he says, when we do this thoroughly through mindfulness, through renunciation, there's a natural, you know, and so the first, it's effort. We scrub, effort. He says, and once you've scrubbed, once you have purified internally, there's a natural flow that starts to happen where loving kindness, compassion, appreciation, and equanimity arise of themselves. And so it's almost this image in that chapter in the book, I talk about going against the stream. The natural stream is greed, hatred, delusion. And so the first step in recovery is renunciation, then kindness and service, being engaged in meetings, being engaged in service, mentoring, going against all of those natural greed, hatred, delusional tendencies of being human, being a human that is afflicted with addiction is a special experience. But there's an image where he says, you know, the heart practices start to flow, where it's almost like you've put in all this effort, and then rather than it being so much effort, the outcome that there's almost a, where you're kind of, you've gotten upstream, and there's almost a reverse in the current. And now, and then he says, you know, and joy comes, and tranquility comes, and you know, all of these the seven factors of awakening, these experiences, so they start to happen. And it's almost like they happen all by themselves. They happen because of all of the effort we have put in. And at some point, it's a little bit less effort and a little bit more unfolding and the fruits of our effort. Oh, now that I have a joyous heart. Now I have a compassionate mind. Now I have a easy tendency towards forgiveness. It doesn't take effort like it did 30 years ago. Now I just forgive because it's become my habit. It's not, ooh, I got it, it's so hard to forgive. It's just like, oh yeah, I forgive you. I hope this is making sense. You know, that it's not effort forever. It becomes less and less effort and more of a natural response. The end of that teaching of the simile of the cloth from the Buddha is, he says, you know, Brahma Vihara, seven factors of awakening, all of these things happen. And then he says, and we come to the point, he said, my students, if you follow this path, if you follow Buddhism thoroughly, he said, you'll even come to the point where you can enjoy pleasant foods without any attachment. And it's like he's bragging. It's like, this is the highest human attainment that there is. We even come to the point, not only do we have compassion for all living beings, we can also enjoy delicious food without being attached to delicious food. And I just always love that there's that sort of like, oh, wow. Like, because, you know, maybe some of the, you know, food addicts can appreciate that even more than many of us who kind of like, delicious food. Like, that's not being attached to delicious food. That's a big deal. And like, to him, it was like, that was the height of enlightenment, enlightened beings. And he's very specific. He says, can enjoy, you know, the choicest long grain rice with the richest curries and chutneys, you know, like Indian food he's talking about. And he's like, and we can enjoy it with no clinging. So you can have that a goal for yourself. The effort of, you know, a thorough refuge recovery Buddhist practice will lead you to being able to enjoy Indian food without any attachment, which, you know, we got that going, which is nice. In meditation, once when the Buddha was asked, he said, well, how much effort do I put in? He said, it's individual to each one of us when you're sitting here meditating. You know, how often do I come back to the chosen object, the practice, the mind wanders, how often do I bring it back? And he used the image of a stringed instrument. I don't know how many of you play the guitar or the bass or a, you know, violin or any kind of stringed instrument. He used, he called it the simile of the lute. A lute is a stringed Indian instrument that's made with a big gourd and some strings, and it's played like a guitar. And he said that the trick is, you know, each one of us has to find the right effort. I can't tell you this is how hard you have to meditate or how relaxed you need to be. So we each need to tune it like you need to tune the strings on the lute, on the guitar. Not too tight. And you've probably had this in your meditation practice. If I try too hard, I end up stressed about my meditation and judging myself, comparing myself. If I try too loose, maybe I fall asleep or I just wander in the planning mind the whole time. So we're always in our meditation, not too tight. Don't be uptight about it. Don't try to crank it down. Don't try to, you know, meditate hard and fast. But also not so relaxed about meditation that we're not really paying attention, that we're just daydreaming or wandering or, you know, in the planning tendency of the mind. Not too tight, not too loose. So maybe reflecting on that a little bit in the sitting tonight, and I'll give some instructions. So find a way to sit that's upright, relaxed. Make any adjustments necessary to find that appropriate upright posture. Allowing our eyes to be gently closed. Relaxing any unnecessary tension in the body, softening. Establishing present time, non-judgmental, kind awareness. Awareness of your whole being, the experience of sound. Here in Los Angeles, it just started pouring rain, the sound of the rain. The experience of smell and tastes, sight, what the eye consciousness is experiencing, even behind the closed eyelids. And the experience of the mood, the heart, the mind right now. Is there a sense of joy or a sense of sorrow? Tuning into it. And feeling this physical form, our bodies sitting in contact with the chair. And resting the attention and the sensations that the breath creates. Breathing in, know that you're breathing in. Breathing out, know that you're breathing out. Feel the breath coming and going, and just tight enough to focus on the sensations of the breath, but loose enough to not control the breath. Just let it come and go. The body breathes all by itself. You find your attention has wandered back into thinking about the future or the past. This is the place where we put the effort, acknowledging, doing it with a sense of kindness, acceptance, not too tight, not too critical. But we choose to disengage from the thinking mind. And escort the attention, bring the awareness back to the body, back to the present time, embodied experience of sitting with awareness of the breath. Maybe you just feel a breath or two and then have to come back over and over gently, not too tight, not too loose, returning to the present. Expanding to include the feeling tone investigation, second foundation. Wherever your attention is right now, whether you're paying attention to the breath or sound, thought, emotion, what are you perceiving as pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? As you scan your attention through your body, what feels good, agreeable, pleasant right now? Any pleasant sensations in the body? Any unpleasant sensations? Any pain, discomfort? Most of the body is probably neutral. Most of the sensations, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. We can feel our arms and legs, trunk, head, face. There's sensation there, but it's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. The effort to investigate, to analyze, to explore. What's happening moment to moment and how it feels. And then the effort to meet the unpleasant with kindness, with compassion, with acceptance. This very counter-instinctual instruction to be kind to your pain, be merciful, be compassionate. The effort of learning to care about our own pain without running from it or trying to avoid, suppress, or ignore it. Likewise, the effort to meet the pleasant with non-attached appreciation. To let go, to not cling. This tendency towards craving is so strong. Craving for the pleasant. As we incline our heart, mind towards non-clinging, non-craving, letting go. When you're ready, you can allow your eyes to open. Without moving, just investigate as you add seeing, present time, non-judgmental kind awareness of seeing as the screen comes back into view, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Maybe the self-consciousness returns a bit more as we open our eyes. Bringing the intention that we bring into the formal sitting meditation into our daily lives, out of the formal practice and into being present for each other at a meeting, at a class, at work, at home, wherever we are. Hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, kindness, compassion, as the intentional response to whatever's happening. This aspect of the Eightfold Path, the sixth aspect, effort, I already said this, but I'll say it again. Every part of the Eightfold Path takes effort. So although this doesn't come until number six on the list, as a reminder, and to let anybody that doesn't know, the Eightfold Path is not linear. It's not like, well, you do one and then you do two and then you, it's not like the 12 steps or something where you take the first step and then the second and the third, and it's a linear process. The Eightfold Path is, it's a list of eight things that's usually actually seen as a wheel. And there's eight spokes on the wheel, the eight spokes of the Buddha's wheel. And this sixth one, although it comes way down the list, you can't understand, you know, do the first one without effort. It takes effort and energy to have an appropriate, a wise understanding, the first factor of the path, or to have wise intentions, appropriate intentions, takes effort. To, you know, wise communication. To, you know, participate in community, show up to the meetings, to share, to mentor, to do our inventories, to listen, you know, to be of service and listen to each other's inventories, takes effort. The sixth factor, right? Livelihood, we talked about last week, right? Effort, you know, the renunciation of the fifth of the five precepts, of the five, you know, commitment to nonviolence, to honesty, to avoiding causing harm in our relationships, avoiding sexual misconduct, that all of it, it takes effort. Renunciation is also effort, to not do what we're tempted to do or craving to do or reactively, habitually have a tendency to do. And then, of course, mindfulness and concentration, the meditation, takes effort. So this sixth factor is a conjoining, is a connecting, is a is, you know, it's connected to the whole path. There's no recovery without effort. There's no awakening. There's no healing without intentionally putting our effort into some of this stuff, which is so counter-instinctual, so against the stream. Drinking, using, you know, whatever our addictions were, those were just sort of us obeying our cravings. Didn't probably, you know, yes, as I was saying in the beginning, it can become quite a bit of work to satisfy all of our cravings. But the craving is effortless. That shit happens all by itself. Not satisfying cravings, having renunciation, having the willingness to sit with the discomfort of the arising and passing of impulse is effort. So reflecting on our own practices, meditation, you know, finding that not too tight, not too loose balance with how much service we're doing in Refuge. How many people are you mentoring? And there is a thing as too tight, too many, of like, oh, I'm mentoring 10 people and I just can't get back to them all. It's too many. Stop raising your hand if you've got, if your dance card is full, But maybe it's like, oh, no, I don't mentor anybody. It's like, oh, too loose. Like service is 100% part of what we're doing. And important to being a bit, to be sharing our time and energy with each other, at least two or three, like we can all at least mentor two or three people. But maybe, and some people seem to have the capacity and they're like, yeah, I've got like seven and I talk to them all, on whatever schedule. And some people have the time and energy for that. But, finding for you, not too many, but not too, don't be too loose, not enough. If you don't have any service commitments and you're not mentoring anybody and you're not, like not enough effort, obviously too loose, taking your recovery for granted rather than being of service, rather than actually following the suggestions, too loose. But everybody has to find, our own tuning of our, and then in our meditation practice, I thought I would look at, in this chapter in the book on page 74, 75 and on to 76, it has those suggestions that I threw out there, where, of how much effort, kind of what does it say? It says here are some suggested guidelines for developing a refuge recovery practice. It says from the beginning, right? So right when we come in, the suggested amount of effort is start with the practice of meditation right away. Meditation is the most important tool in supporting your renunciation and beginning your recovery. Begin with the simple breath awareness concentration practice on page, part one, I forget what page. After a week or so of renunciation and abstinence, begin to alternate the forgiveness meditation with breath practice every other day. Eventually, we'll want to learn all of the practices and the meditations offered. But in the first few months of practice, we encourage a focus of concentration and forgiveness. So just thinking about that, right? From the beginning, this is the first couple months, first 2 months. Meditating daily with a switch between breath awareness and forgiveness, breath awareness, forgiveness, breath awareness, forgiveness, and getting those practices going. That's the effort, the guidance for the first couple months. 2 to 6 months, meditate for 20 minutes daily. Start with mindfulness of the breath and begin to alternate forgiveness practices every other day, as I said. Go to as many meetings and meditation groups as you can. Ask somebody from the recovery community to mentor you and call them regularly to check in about your practice of the four truths. Complete your first truth inventory and second truth inventory. Just thinking about that, the suggestion is within the first 6 months, do the inventories, do your practice, get a mentor. That's the encouragement. And then, when we're talking about effort, not just, the Eightfold Path, this is where maybe I took the liberty to add some of my own opinion. this is not part of the Eightfold Path, but I said, perform weekly physical practices like yoga, dance, or other exercises with mindfulness to make physical fitness, to make exercise, to make movement part of our recovery practice. The necessity of bringing mindfulness into the body, into activity, and to not just be a couch potato recovery person, but to be an active recovery person who is doing movement, what does it say? Weekly, to really make sure that we're bringing some physical activity in. 6 to 12 months. Increase your meditation practice to 30 minutes a day and begin expanding the mindfulness practice to include forgiveness practice in your meditation for at least 15 minutes every other day until you have no more resentments. You'll hear that line over and over. Like, if you've ever wondered, how long do I have to do this fucking forgiveness meditation? Until you have no more resentment. When, if you got no resentments, you can stop doing the forgiveness. If you can look into your heart and have no hatred towards anybody, like you bring, you know, there's the litmus test. You bring up your top 10 resentments, top 10 people that you hate, that you judge, that you fear, that you, you know, you can get into politics, wherever you want to get into, and be like, can I meet that person without resentment, without judgment, without, can I meet them with compassion? Can I bring up those political people or those warmongers or those greed meisters? Can I meet them with compassion rather than anger and resentment? In the 6 to 12 months, the encouragement is attend a meditation, a weekend meditation retreat. Attend a retreat as part of the effort, part of the, you know, lifestyle of recovery, of practicing Buddhism. Go to a meditation retreat. This is a suggestion. And all of us looking at like, okay, some people like, hey, I'm, you know, 6 months sober. I don't know if I'm ready to go to a retreat. The suggestion is go in your first year, go, you know, to a short one, go to a weekend retreat, go show yourself that you can do that. And in this, 6 to 12 months, begin making amends as part of the forgiveness process. So first, you know, you have 6 months of forgiveness practice, bringing up the people that you have harmed, asking them for forgiveness. Then you start to make amends. You don't jump into amends before we have processed and asked for forgiveness and written the inventories. Then we break, you know, jump into the direct forgiveness. Please forgive me for having harmed you. Amends process. 1 to 5 years. Begin daily meditation of 45 minutes in one sitting or split into 1 30-minute and 1 15-minute session. After the first year of renunciation, sobriety, abstinence, begin practicing the four foundations of mindfulness and the heart practices of loving kindness, compassion, appreciation, and equanimity. Incorporate more and more mindfulness and the heart practices in daily life, like I was saying at the end of the meditation, not just on the cushion, but bring it with the eyes open, you know, out into daily life. Complete the amends process. I think this is, you know, I wrote it. I believe in it. That we don't need to be 10 years in going like, I never made those amends. Within the first 5 years, what, you know, this is the suggestion, 1 to 5 years. Within the first 5 years, saying like, I've completed all of the amends. I've cleaned up all of the wreckage of my past to the best of my ability. I've taken responsibility. I've reached out. Within those first five, I feel like even 5 years, that's pretty fucking generous. But you hear about people decades into recovery talking about, you know, that they never made those, some of those key amends. So, strong encouragement to complete that in the first 5 years. And start to attend 7 to 10 day silent meditation retreats yearly, longer retreats. Having completed a retreat and finished your amends, you know, this is where I edit, you know, this is the first edition. It says, then you begin mentoring. So the original suggestion for mentoring was after you had a year and you'd been, you know, done your amends and done your, but it's too high of a bar. We needed to lower the bar. So don't wait. Start mentoring each other right away. You know, just peer support. You know, once you've started to work on your inventories and you're a member, you're going to meetings, you're doing the thing, you've gone through the Eightfold Path, bring other people through it. You don't have to, whether you've done a retreat or not, whether you meditate every day or not, bring each other through this process. So important. And having finished the initial inventory, do an annual inventory on your recovery, looking at how you are currently engaging with the four truths and the Eightfold Path. Where are the weak links? What needs more attention and effort? 5 to 15 years, stay involved. You know, and I started that 5 to 15 with stay involved because there is a statistical phenomena that happens where after people have been in recovery for a few years, they start to wander away from the community, stop attending meetings, stop being of service. That's sort of like, I came here when I was desperate because I needed it and I don't need it anymore. And, you know, forgetting to be of service, forgetting the gratitude, forgetting all the people that were here for us when we got here. So stay involved 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you know, be that person that's still at the meeting when somebody goes out and comes back, you know, that, like they say, like kind of keep your seat and show, you know, everybody what you've been shown. Continue to practice and share your experience, time, and energy with the new people. Include the forgiveness practice in your meditation until you have no more resentments. Try to attend longer retreats, try to attend a longer retreat that is 1 to 3 months in length. 1 month to 3 month long-term retreat at some point, you know, within your first 15 years, 5 to 15 years. There's a depth of awareness and insight and healing that happens in longer silent retreats that I have experienced. And I'm only sharing with you, you know, what my experience was, and I deeply encourage it. Continue to do annual inventories. Where's the weak links in our Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path? 15 years to life. Stay involved. Continue to practice. Share your experience. Attend the longer retreats. Continue the forgiveness practice until there's no more resentments. Continue the annual inventory. So that even in, you know, decades in, we're still putting effort. We're not resting on it. You know, even when we're, you know, in this place where like, I don't, you know, I'm not tempted to drink or use or act out, or, you know, I'm quite solid, but I show up to be of support for others. I'm not just coming here for the, you know, selfish receiving. I'm coming here to give, coming here to be part of, to be of service, to, and I continue the annual inventory, and I continue my meditation practice, and I continue to attend retreats. So there's lots of different directions we could go. Talking about all of the effort. Those are some of my thoughts for tonight, and I'll open it. We have a few minutes for discussion, comments, questions, clarifications about anything that I've presented. You can just raise your hand in the reactions tab down there. Amy, go ahead.
I was just going to go if you were going to call on me. For me, the most effort for my recovery happens on retreat. I'm really grateful that that's an important part in the book and in the program. I mean, I can't imagine my recovery without retreat, because that's where so much work happens, whether I want it to or not, and so much shifts. I was seeing a therapist at one time when I went on a week-long retreat and came back and talked to her, and she was like, I'm glad that all my clients don't go on week-long silent retreats, because then I wouldn't really have any clients. So yeah, retreat, man, retreat. That's all.
Thanks, Amy. And Refuge has, I think, 5 retreats this year. There's one next week in Oregon. There's one next month in Texas. There's one in June, the conference in California, in the end of August in Vermont, and then in December, there's going to be one in North Carolina. So there's 5 Refuge Recovery retreats, you know, to choose from this year. So lots of opportunities for people to do this. And we do our best to provide some scholarships and for people who can't afford it, so it doesn't become a thing where you can only go if you can afford it. But of course, they cost a lot of money to put on the retreats. Any other thoughts, questions, comments about effort in our recovery on this path. All right, well, it's about time anyways. So announcements. I just talked to, you know, there's five retreats. Okay, Fizzy, jump in.
Hi, Fizzy. Just on that, like on effort, how, I mean, I know to check with your gut and meditation, but I'm in my early recovery. But how do you know when to find that balance? And I know it's in the book about, you know, swimming upstream and downstream and finding the right current. Like, what tips would you have on knowing if you're putting too much effort? It's based on what you were talking about.
You know, in the beginning, we probably, maybe the best thing is just to accept that we'll probably be a bit imbalanced in the beginning. Let it be much more of a long-term goal rather than thinking like, I'm brand new to meditation and I need to do it right and I need to be balanced. Maybe just a humility of like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing and I'll probably be really imbalanced and I'll try too hard and then I'll try to, you know, and I'll be too lax about it. And maybe just a humility of like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit here for 20 minutes. I'm going to try to pay attention to my breath, or I'm going to say, I forgive you, even though I don't admit it or mean it yet. So maybe in the beginning, you know, it's too high of a expectation that we're going to have a totally balanced, not too tight, not too loose. And that humility of like, I'll probably be either too loose about this or too tight about this, but I'm just going to do it. And I'm going to do it over and over and over and over. And then when you're some months and some years in, you might start to see, oh, okay, yeah, I could try a little bit, put a little bit more effort, a little tighter. Or, oh, I'm a little uptight about this. What if I relax my shoulders a little bit? I hope that's helpful, because I just feel like, you know, in the beginning, you know, let go of any perfectionist, like I have to do it right and have that perfect balance, and just be like, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to go to the meetings. I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen to the guided meditations. What I'm going to, you know, my commitment is to keep my ass on the cushion. And over the months and years, balance will come. And you'll have more ability to tune your meditation practice. Don't worry about it too much right in the beginning. I hope that's useful. What was I saying? Announcements? I got a couple of announcements. One is Refuge Recovery can really use your support. We are running at a deficit. We don't have much, not very few meetings are sending much money in. I think people are just trying to pay the rent on their meeting spaces. Even the online meetings, a small percentage of people that attend the meetings seem to actually donate at the meetings. We receive the donation. So we see there's 30 people at this meeting and we got 5 donations from the 30 people or whatever. I'd like to ask each one of you, and I'm going to start a thing. I haven't started it yet. You're the first to hear it. It's the 10-year anniversary of Refuge Recovery. This summer, 10 years we've been around. Would you please consider making a $10 monthly donation to Refuge Recovery World Services, sort of to celebrate our 10-year anniversary? And would you, you know, so, you know, just thinking about that, you don't have to tell me. There's a link that Michelle put in the chat to Donna. So you can go in there. I think there might even be a monthly donation button. There's probably a $10 monthly donation button in there. And just my request, and I'm going to ask everybody in Refuge Recovery, if you would consider doing a $10 a month donation to World Services so that we can pay our bills, so that we can pay the employees, so that we can pay the insurance, so that we can pay for the website, all of this stuff, because the money's really just not coming in. And I need to do some fundraising. And we're a grassroots organization and you're the members, and you know, we support this thing by, but it's voluntary. Nobody has to pay anything. Everybody's welcome. But I ask you to voluntarily consider giving $10 a month to Refuge Recovery, and to also, you know, announce that in some of the meetings that you're in, or tell the people that you're mentoring or the recovery people, and being like, "Hey, I'm going to do $10 a month to World Services." Are you, you know, ask them, ask your friends, are they willing to do it too, if you can? It's a low ask, but we have thousands of people coming to meetings, hundreds. I don't know how many, but probably. Probably over, you know, 1,000 people attending Refuge Recovery meetings. So if everybody was given $10 a month, it would support the nonprofit. But everybody's not giving much. And so we really need to start asking, please support World Services. The other announcement that I have is that we just announced and posted and opened Refuge Recovery Buddhist pilgrimage to India, November 13th through 24th. So this fall, November 13th through 24th, I'm going to take about 25 or 30 people to India. And we're going to go to like where the Buddha was born and where the Buddha was enlightened and where the Buddha died and where the Buddha taught. We're going to do this kind of traditional Buddhist pilgrimage, and it's going to be all Refuge Recovery people. And we're going to have refuge meetings every day, and we're going to have meditation. And so that's on the website now. And there is limited space and, you know, of course, a lot of planning to go to India. But if that's something on your radar, something that you're interested in, you're all invited. You can't all come because I don't have enough spaces for everybody, but you're all invited to come with me to India in November if you can afford it and if the timing is right and all of that. Basically, just charging what it costs to do the trip. We're going to part of most of the time, we're going to be on this train, this Indian train that's a specific Buddhist Indian pilgrimage train that's going to take us from Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha was enlightened, to Varanasi, where he first gave his teachings, to Lumbini, where he was born, to Rajgir, where he died. And it's going to be this kind of really cool Indian Buddhist pilgrimage train where you have like a sleeper car that you, you know, stay in, and then hotels. And I think it's going to be a pretty amazing trip. And I hope that some of you join me if you can this year, if not sometime in the future. This is something that I just started doing last year, leading these kind of pilgrimage trips, and I enjoy it, and I'm happy to do it, and I hope that some of you join me on it. If you know anybody in Texas, the registration for the Texas retreat's a little bit low. It's happening in 1 month, April, looking it up, April, it's a 3-night retreat, April 11th through 14th. If you know anybody, it's near Houston, somewhere between Houston and Austin in Texas. So if you got any recovery homies down Texas way, remind them that there's this 3-day retreat in Refuge Recovery retreat in Texas happening next month. And maybe I'll see some of you in the Oregon retreat next weekend, where we have, I think, 70 people coming, big retreat, and looking forward to that. Hope some of you are going to make it to that. That's all I got for tonight. May any goodness that comes from our practice be gathered and shared. May each one of us heal, recover, awaken, and together may we create a positive change on this planet. Good to see everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and see you next time.
Refuge Recovery is freely offered. If you'd like to make a donation to support us, you may do so by following the link in the episode notes. We appreciate your generosity.